एक मिनट रुक जाओ, रेडी होने दो। चलो ये कर लेते हैं, दिस कुड बी अ ग्रेट इंट्रो।
Hi, I'm Akshay.
Hi, this is Saurabh, and you are listening to the Founder Thesis Podcast. We meet some of the most celebrated startup founders in the country.
And we want to learn how to build a unicorn.
Hi, I'm Preeti Rathi Gupta. I'm the founder of Lakshmi. I'm also managing director Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers.
It is no longer breaking news that young women today are storming into male-dominated areas. But there was an era when a young woman was expected to get married, put her career on hold for the sake of her family, and it was path-breaking to see a woman take on leadership roles in corporates. One such trailblazer is Preeti Rathi Gupta. She is the daughter of Anand Rathi, who is the founder of one of the largest financial services groups in India. She not only took up challenging roles within the Anand Rathi Group, but also diversified into film production. And her most recent venture and passion is Lakshmi, which is spelled as L-X-M-E. Lakshmi is a community-driven fintech that is putting women in charge of their finances by offering training, content, community, and investing products. And with her decades of experience, Preeti will surely scale up Lakshmi to meaningfully impact millions of women in India. Here's Preeti telling Akshay that about her wonderful journey.
Okay. So, Preeti, tell me about growing up in a family of entrepreneurs, so to say. Like, what was your childhood like?
So, actually, interestingly, my childhood, my father wasn't an entrepreneur. He was a professional. And it's only at, I think, when he turned 45, he turned an entrepreneur. So, I've actually growing up seen a professional, you know, at home for most of my growing up years. And then
where was he working? Like if you could just tell us his story.
Yeah, so he was working with the Aditya Birla Group. And he had, a 20-year inning there where he set up what is known as Birla Finance, Birla Money, Aditya Birla Money. And Birla Finance, it's something that he set up.
Which is their mutual fund arm, I think.
Yes. So he actually started with, he started with their textile businesses, set up cement businesses for the group. But because of his financial acumen, he worked very closely with Mr. Birla to come up with these ideate constantly on how could the group overall do better when it came to finance functions. So one of the things that he did was centralize all finance functions, brought them together. And that was his idea, so that you leverage on the power of the group and just the whole breadth of, you know, what the group across was doing, whether it is things like lending, borrowing, or looking at hedging, etc. So I think that then eventually grew into Birla Finance, and then, you know, what is today the other financial services firm. So we had an extensive career there, and we moved actually, thanks to his career, we moved every 3 years, 4 years, we were in a different city. So when people talk of adaptability quotient, I think thanks to him, we learned it early on. And then eventually we settled in Bombay, and I think at 45, and he just felt that his other two kids were a little younger. That was probably either he would take the step then or never. So I think he just made that big jump, that leap of faith. At that point in time. And it's unheard of because, you know, to give up a very nice, cushy job to really start off on. At least then it was unheard of. Today's world is very different. I think if you look at the startup world, you know, you'll see.
Now people are like, job kyun kar rahe ho? So, like, how did he fund the business? Like, what was his idea, basically?
Of course, his forte was always finance. And having got that experience across working with the Birla Group, and before that he was with DCM and, you know, a company called Swadeshi Polytechs. So he understood the whole piece of financial consulting for, corporates or companies. And I think when he left his job, he knew that he had to be in a business which was not very capital intensive. and therefore services, right? And within services, of course, you know, financial consulting was something that he did. He knew was his forte, so he said he'll do that. But in the meanwhile, I'd got married and my husband was also in the stock market. And he was a National Stock Exchange broker and my father had a Bombay Stock Exchange card. So they said, okay, why don't we join forces? He said, I'm not interested in broking, so why don't you carry on with the whole broking piece? And I would still want to continue into corporate finance and financial consulting. So I think that's what the structure was. And obviously, he knew that we couldn't do anything that was very capital intensive because he hadn't, you know, too many responsibilities at home. So there wasn't like a huge corpus. Yes, there was some amount, but not a huge corpus sort of built to have anything in the manufacturing or in industry. Or
right, right.
So yeah, so this was the way to go.
So what did you do in terms of like, you know, after your schooling got over, like, did you have a plan that you want to like do something in the area of finance or like?
So I think I always knew, I think I always say that I think it was very deeply embedded in the DNA, but I think my father played a very, very instrumental role because while I was growing up, I mean, there were no, people wouldn't do internships then, right? But I think the day I joined college, he said, why don't you go to, my choice was between a college known as Sydenham and HR. And he said, why don't you join HR? Because that's 7 to 10 in the morning and then you can come and work with me and you can handle the family portfolio. So you learn all of that. So a lot of credit to him for pushing me, you know, into using that part of the day. So whether it is managing our portfolios, family portfolios, or learning a new language, you know, that was just basic and all of that. And just pushing me towards, you know, finance and finance related sort of, you know, subjects. And then I interned with my uncle who was a stockbroker. So I sort of got the hang of, I mean, by the time I was married, I knew what stockbroking was all about. And so I think he sort of pushed me from early days to say, look, you know, you have to, if nothing else, you need to understand how money works. Because no matter whether you build a profession in it or not, it is something that will always serve you well. And I think that, to me, was very empowering. And it was
you
part
were
of,
investing real money, like he gave you a corpus?
Absolutely. Okay. So I started by understanding how he'd done the investments, right? So across our family portfolio, I would understand what stocks, when are dividends declared, make sure, you know, very basic. I think he started with making me do accounting stuff that, you know, check whether dividends have come in or not in each of the portfolios, each account, etc. And that just helped a very, very, you know, fundamental understanding of how stock markets work. What does it mean to invest into stocks? You know, why do you look at stocks that pay dividends and you look at growth stocks where, you know, the appreciation of the stocks helps you build your capital. So I think that was very, very helpful. And which is why to me, it's now, you know, it's something that's just part of who I am because it's been so deeply embedded.
So like, yeah, around 1920 is when your father also started Anand Rathi and then you started going to the office and learning the ropes. So tell me about the journey of how probably Anand Rathi started with a small team of couple of people and how it grew. Like,
yeah,
and your contribution also in that whole journey.
Yeah, so actually when I got married, Anand Rathi wasn't already set up. My father was still with the Birlas. And my husband set up a stockbroking company. So he came from, you know, the background of textiles. And he said, I want to, you know, 1991, everybody wanted to do stockbroking, right? Because that was the Harshad Mehta time. It was a boom in the markets and there was just too much money there. And he said, why don't we start something here? And which is where I helped him set up his National Stock Exchange, you know, the broking company, because I had that, you know, experience. I knew, in fact, when we set up the company, I was actually doing institutional trading, sitting on the desk and doing trading. So that's how the journey started. And then in 1994 is when Anand Rathi was set up, when they joined forces. And invariably, I think, you know, the way we started functioning or how other than my father and my husband, every other family member who came in was like, look, we need hands, right? All hands on board, right? So that's how we joined the business, each one of us setting up a business. Of course, the company started really small, very small office. We had about, I think, 15 to 20 people. Essentially, as you can guess, most of them chartered accountants.
No, 15, 20 is pretty sizable to start a company with.
Yeah, yeah, but you see, what was helpful was that we already had, in our National Stock Exchange, we already had a broking business. So that was already a business that had revenues.
You had revenues. You had
a base, yeah. And then, of course, the financial consulting at that point in time, it was not very sort of people heavy. And if anybody who wanted to sort of give a mandate for financial restructuring of the company, etc., they always wanted Mr. Rathi there. So it wasn't
absolutely. Right? Yeah. So, it was his brand, basically.
Yeah. And then, of course, over a period of time, we realized that it is not very scalable because, you know, if he has to give so much time and, you know, irrespective of whether you build teams. So then slowly, of course, as each one of us joined the business, for example, when I joined, I set up the commodities desk, currencies desk. My brother joined and he set up the wealth management business. Soon we had the investment banking business. My sister-in-law joined in. We set up the insurance business. So that's how we sort of, I think when we just started, we said, okay, you know, let's see who brings in what strength, what can we do with these limited resources. But I think it helped to have, again, my father's acumen in saying that, you know, this is, you know, you actually come back to that whole unit cost system, which he had implemented with the Birlas, and saying, you know, this is how we sort of look at building revenues. Also, I think we were very, in that sense, very unconventional. Most business houses then would say, okay, let's first build revenue, then take on expenses, right? I think for us, right from the beginning, we knew that if we had to create a business of this size, you need to get resources from outside. And which means that, you know, it will be an expense that you take on. But that is the way to sort of grow to the size that you want to. So I think we did do it, very differently. And I think most businesses didn't.
Like your father put in his life savings.
No, not just that. And I think, you know, I mean, today what you call the startup mindset is what we had back then, right? Where you said, okay, let's first just get in the, you know, the resources cost, and we'll see how we, you know, we...
Then figure out monetization.
Yeah. So it was, the monetization was very clear, of course. We knew each of the businesses, there is a monetization happening very soon. But I don't think we waited for... other businesses to sort of pay before we set up new businesses. And it helped to have family members, who came in to set up different businesses.
Right. Yeah. Otherwise, you'd have to pay very high salaries for like having professionals to do those.
Yeah, but interestingly also, Akshay, one of the things that we always... the way we've run Anand Rathi is also that within a year and a half or 2 years, we build in a professional team for the business. So the family member actually is the entrepreneur, right? So they go and stick their neck out and they say, okay, let's create this business. But let's also get professionals to then take charge. And so which is why, we today call ourselves, or we are known as a family-led but professionally run company.
Yeah,
but we built a sizable business. By 2000, I think we were in, for retail, we were present across 1,000 plus locations. Our branch offices were there.
Yeah, and this was like on your owned or franchisee model?
So it was a mix of both, but we were the only group that had more of our own branches as opposed to franchises. So that by then, I think we were very, very firmly established in the investment services retail piece. Our wealth business was just building up. I think we had started it and it had come, it had picked up legs. Institutional
wealth business was for HNIs only?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. It was It was H&I and Ultra H&I, actually. And that was picking up legs. Also, I think we had investment banking had also picked up. We had sort of said, we started doing a lot of capital raising, corporate capital raising through IPOs or M&As. I think insurance was probably not started in 2000. Yeah, but we were actively still in the broking space with an investment bank, investment banking arm, and the wealth management sort of picking up.
Okay. And 2000 is when, you know, I think the broking space would have just started to get disrupted with the online players. So, you know, how did that, how did Anand Rathi evolve as the market?
Well, I'll tell you. So this is a very interesting story. So we also started with our online broking. And I remember us and Sher Khan, we debuted on the same day. This was 2001. And I remember that our, this was 1999, I think, just on the cusp of 2000, right? And we had all our, because we went online, we had, because of our brand setup, we just had too many people log in the first day itself. And I remember our site crashed, right? Because we weren't anticipating that traffic. But that, yeah, that was that. So we were amongst the first few to go online. I think technology is something that we've adopted or we've adapted to very quickly right from the beginning, because I think everybody pretty much had the mindset that, you know, we need to use technology really to run businesses, scale businesses. So
Right. Okay. And how did your role evolve? Like in 2000, what role were you playing, and how did that evolve?
So again, you know, just setting up businesses. And of course, around 2000, I'd actually taken a break because my son was born. So, and you know, I hope we talk about Lakshmi, and I'm going to tell you why Lakshmi happened, right? So I took a break. And then when I came back, also, that was the time when, you know, like you said, everything had, the capital markets or stock broking as an industry had become very, very.
When did you come back? Like,
so this was 2004.
Okay.
And so it had become very professionalized, and so had our company. So when I came back, I realized one of the things, I mean, I wasn't really adding value in the business because there were professionals who were very, very well qualified. And I think for me, it was time to set up, you know, play my role of setting up new businesses. So 2003 is when actually I started. I went back to school. So I did executive education at SPJN. So that was something that was always sort of left unfinished, right? So so took care of that unfinished business. And I think while I was there, I sort of also looked at the landscape of within the financial services, you know, what are the new trends? And of course, the commodity futures were just starting. Commodity futures in our country had been banned for almost, you know, 40 years. And then they sort of, you know, then the finance bill was passed, which said, okay, now we can have exchanges which offer future commodity futures. And that to me was a very interesting space because it was new. It was markets were very unorganized even then. And it was challenging because, you know, the fundamentals and the way the markets behaved were very, very different to stock markets, right? It was like every commodity was an entire stock market by itself. So so that's what I came back and I set up the commodity futures business. And then over the next few years, currency futures also happened, which was a great, you know, a great complement to the commodity futures, because commodity futures are essentially also very internationally linked. So your commodity prices are internationally, a large part of your commodities prices, whether it's gold, you know, metals, precious metals, or it is a lot of the spices or pulses, they were linked to international prices. And therefore, I think currencies was a great complement to commodities. So that currency futures was also what was the desk that I set up.
So,
yeah.
So tell me about 2010, like you know, just like decade by decade. So we talked about 2000, where we were. So 2010, like where
so
was...
2010, commodity markets were booming. I think the business that I had set up was doing exceptionally well. We were amongst the top three commodity brokers. For me, it was personally also a very, you know, it was a challenging and gratifying journey.
So around 13, 14, I guess you started getting into other things. Like 13, I can see you started Ishka Films, and 14 of you did managing the roles. So tell me about that period and that transition started happening.
Yeah, so I think there was one personal life incident which sort of, you know, just made me take two steps back and think about, you know, what exactly do I want my life to look like going forward. And while
around
I was working
13, very, like this happened around that time.
Yeah, just so 2011, actually, I lost my mother, and she was very young. She was 59 when she passed away. And it just made me sit up and think that, you know, life is unpredictable, it's ephemeral, and you need to start really, you know, stop living just in the present. You need to look beyond. And I think which is where I said, okay, these are the few things that I know I want to do. So my mother was, she had the artistic, creative genes. I got them from her. I was always, she made sure that we are all learning music. We are all into the arts in some form or not. Remember, schools were not playing such an active role back
right.
then. So
absolutely.
Thanks to my mother, I think all of us have got that exposure. And she would keep telling me that you're very creative. You should do something, you know, with the aptitude that you have. And I think after she passed away, I said, look, I mean, I do want to do, I want to create some sort of legacy. I know businesses are there and we are creating a legacy there, but maybe something which has a longer shelf life and which is more mine, right? Personally mine as well. And then I was doing some work on creating a film fund, which was part of what we were thinking at Anand Rathi, you know, because a lot of our clients did want, at that time, media and entertainment was booming and everybody wanted one foot in, right? And we said, can we create a fund around in this space? So when I did my homework, I think I realized that, well, a fund is not very suitable because, you know, we are very conservative in our offerings in wealth, and media and entertainment space is hugely volatile. So you couldn't tie it in a box and therefore it was not doable. But since I'd done my homework and I've always had that bent of mind, you know, saying, okay, I want to do something creative. I did see a space evolving, a space for very, you know, sort of intellectual cinema. At that point in time, it was called intellectual, but today content has really become, you know, the thing, right? But at that point in time, it was essentially the stars. If you make a film with the stars, you've had it, right? But the satellites were slowly buying content by saying, okay, even if theatrical, I don't make great money, I know that here, I can sort of de-risk it. So that space was empty. There weren't many people making a lot of interesting cinema. And I said, okay, this is probably one place that I would want to get in. So I told my family, this is what I want to do. And, you know, as you can assume, here is a family of financial experts. And they were like, right? Films? Are you sure you want to do films? Nobody makes films. But, you know, I had to really convince them. But that to me was also, that was the time when it was a huge recognition of the fact that as an individual, you have your own financial goals also. And are you really thinking about that? Or you're just assuming that, all right, in the future, if I want to do something, I'll do it, right? And I realized that this is something I want to do completely on my own. So to create that corpus took me some time. But the biggest learning was that if you have financial goals, it's important to write them down and start working towards them. Yeah. And that's how Ishka Films came about. And it all happened. Actually, a lot of things fell into place. I had a great friend who suggested this, you know, who goaded me to meet this filmmaker. And I met him. He had a great script. And, you know, I said, okay, this is the kind of film that I want to make. Something that's quirky, but still has entertainment value and yet leaves you with a thought.
Which one was that? The first one that you did?
So actually, the first one was eventually made second. It's a film called Karma. But actually, I started my journey with that script first. But we had to shelve it for some time because of some, you know, again, learning experiences. But I had to put it aside. And in the meanwhile, I had another great script that came my way, and which was, the director of the film, Anu Menon. I met her and she described it. And that was the time that I was still sort of dealing with the loss, you know, my mom's loss. And this resonated so deeply. And then I realized also during that time that when I spoke to people, every person had that sense of, you know, everybody's gone through some sense of trauma and loss due to, you know, loss of a loved one. And I thought it was a great film. And right from scratch, I mean, waiting was my hands-on journey to filmmaking. So right from talking to the cast, writing to them, getting your budgets drawn out, you know, everything, marketing, publicity, just doing everything hands-on. I think in that one film, I sort of at least understood that how do you, you know, what are the do's and don'ts of making film. So yeah, that was my first film. And then of course, Karma got made in the meanwhile.
And this is all like your personal corpus that you invested
absolutely,
in.
Absolutely. Okay. So I didn't have a lot of money, right? So I had to make, you know, small budget films, but films which I truly believed in.
How many films have you made under the Ishka? And this would be like what? You would be a producer here? Or
I'm a producer. And I've made, I think, features too. I've made three short films. But this is the thing, right? It needs bandwidth. The aim is not really to get a studio, but really make films that I believe in. So as and when I have time. But now I've set up a team at Ishka as well. So we are looking. So I have two or three features more in the pipeline. And I think that's a field that I've learned a lot, and I apply a lot from what I learned there here as well in my financial services. I think it's,
what kind of transferable learning have you got from filmmaking?
Filmmaking, it was very interesting for me, that journey into filmmaking. When we were making Waiting, and I would speak to the script writer, the dialogue writer, or the director, or even Nasirji, and you know, people who were Kalki, who were on the in the film, it was very liberating, because when, you know, coming from where I was, it was a very, very structured way of thinking and working, right? It had backed by data, it had a structure, and there was a need for uniformity in what you were doing.
There was a checklist approach, basically.
And I think that was a completely different world. There were no rules of the game. There were no sort of, you know, boundaries to how you could think. And I think that's why just being with a set of creative people, I think to me, it helped me also come back and say that there may be more ways of doing this than how one thinks, right? Also, I think it brought, as a woman, I always thought that I brought a lot of empathy quotient to the team, to the company. But I think I brought back so much more with those interactions, because, you know, that those are people who are living life very, very differently than how we are. If you look at people in the film industry, it is a film to film. It's like a freelancing thing. There is no guarantee of what's going to happen tomorrow. And yet for them to live that fulfilling life, to me, just brought home the power of doing what you are 100%, enjoying it totally, and just being in it, like, you know. And I think that so many different things that I think that impacted me as an individual, which I think I sort of brought back to the teams here. And a lot of people would ask me that, how can you do, you know, two completely like other ends of the spectrum sort of jobs. But I think they were very, very complimentary. And
It basically helped you increase your EQ. like your emotional quotient?
Yeah, if people tell me that I was always very EQ was very very sometimes a bit too high, but I think it did totally.
And you became the managing director. So you take that role from, like, who was the MD before that? And you know, tell me about that transition.
So essentially, there, you know, we typically we sort of had an overarching umbrella over all our companies. But as you know, in financial services, each you know, because of different regulators and different compliances, every stream of business needs to have a separate entity. So, for example, insurance has to be a separate entity from broking. Similarly, you know, now even your advisory has to be, you know, you can't do advisory and broking, but wealth had to be separate. You had investment banking. So there were just too many. NBFC had to be a separate structure. So that's when we sort of sat down as a, and we have a family board. So we, within us, sort of decided that we need to individually sort of looking on our, you know, going by our core functions, what we spend most of our time or where we think we have the skill of, you know, where we are playing leadership roles, choose to be on boards of their company. That was also the time we brought in more structure to our boards. You know, we just made sure that we have external board members. You know, we are, our boards are full of, you know, completely sort of, otherwise, if you see a lot of the family run companies, boards are, you know, they're just there in name, right? Okay, there is a board, right? Which is where we, that's how we structured. So then, which is why we had kind of, and we also said that we don't want all family members to be on all boards. Because I think individually we were also evolving and growing, and I think each one of us sort of needed that space to also work in. So which is why, you know, I was on the board, I am on the board of Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers, because preliminary, that's where I play a greater role. We were also setting up something known as preferred channel, which is moving even, forget commodities, but even moving our
sector. And how would you rank them? Like, which are the bigger parts of the businesses, like relatively?
So I think obviously the ones that's one that services are in, you know, our businesses, which is stockbroking business. I think that that is one of the larger chunks. But our construction and SMEs also, you know, maybe just slightly behind the. So I would, if I were to put it, you know, I would put 40, 30, and 30.
This you're talking about the NBFC.
NBFC, yeah.
No, no. So within the group, like these entities, like what are their relative contributions to overall?
Well, on contribution, I would say, I think wealth management today is about 40% of our contribution.
Okay.
And our retail or our broking services and distribution, which is Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers, is about 30%. And then we have all other businesses as well.
Okay. So, you know, tell me about Lakshmi. Like, you know, when did that idea come to your mind and what was the trigger for that?
So, well, like I said, right, there were a couple of milestones in life that made me, you know, just sit back and think that why didn't, and I come from financial services. I understand financial planning. I'm somebody who didn't sort of plan for this financial goal. And then I think when I looked around me all along, especially when we were, when we deal with retail, within the retail services, when we speak to women about financial planning, it's very disturbing to see that women, you know, whether they are earning their own money, doing great in their careers, very smart at what they do, when it comes to managing money, for some reason, just sort of, they're resigned to saying that the men will manage it. My husband, father, so we they would understand the concept, but they would say, no, let me talk to my father or my husband or brother, and then, you know, I'll come back. And I think to me, that was something that that invariably, you know, would affect me very, very deeply, because I do think that one of the reasons why, you know, we speak about gender equality, etc. One of the reasons why I think... you know, in terms of gender pay gaps, etc., there's still time to go, and there's a recognition of it, but there's still some time till we reach the, you know, equal pays, right, between for men and women. But one of the fastest way of at least reducing this financial equality was just to start managing your money and making it grow. And that was also the one way of really saying, you know, for a woman not to have to compromise, whether it came to a career or a relationship or anything else in life, right? And if you're a woman, you have so many stories around you, which are just, you know, they sort of just cement the fact that, yes, if this is not done, you suffer in just so many different ways. And the third piece is that as a society, I think we will not be a healthy society till women play an active and equal role, because when women take charge of their money, or when they grow money, or they are in charge of, you know, deciding what happens with that money, I think money is reinvested into families, into communities, which essentially makes our society and I think the communities that we live in far richer. And to me, I think the only, I used to always wonder that why we are not able to, when I talk to a woman, why am I not able to reach out to her, right? And while this was a pain point for a very long time, I actually did, like I said, unfinished business at various times of life. So I went to Harvard to study. I did executive education there. I did something as the OPM, which is like your rushed MBA programs. There we were asked to make a strategy pitch for a business idea, which was completely new. And this was where I, you know, because it was on my mind for a long time, I pitched this idea. And
Lakshmi.
At that point in time, for the lack of a better word, you know, instantaneously I said, okay, Lakshmi is a great word because it's a dichotomy, right? We pray to Goddess Lakshmi in India, and yet we as women think we are not good enough. And which is why I called it, at that point in time, I called it Lakshmi, and pitched that idea. And it was, I think that was the time when it really came home to me that first women not managing their money is not just an Indian problem. It's a global issue, right? Second, in my cohort of 160 people, my batchmates, there were about 135 men. And I think pretty much a large population of the men said, why do you need a different platform for women? Right? Here's the platform. There's so many people doing financial services, you know, investment advisory. Why do you need a separate one? But each one of the women, and these are all women who are leading entrepreneurs in their countries, they said, wow, this is amazing, because this is where we would have put our money in when we were younger. And possibly that one way to really change or impact the way women live their lives. So to me, I think that was the deepest sort of my biggest takeaway also from Harvard. And then, of course, my professors, they connected me to a woman in the US who had started something similar at that point in time. And then, of course, connected me with a lot of resources, who could make me understand what their landscape was. So, yeah, I came back home all charged with knowing what exactly I want to do. And that's how Lakshmi sort of happened. I came back here. We did, I did a lot of primary and secondary research to understand, because Indian demography is different. What would work in the US may not work here. So we spoke to about 5,000 women to understand, you know, what are the pain points, what are the friction points, why you intrinsically know that because you've been in the business, but it was good to document it also and analyze it, right? And say, okay, these are your data points. And I think once we'd done that, that's from, you know, all that distilled is what then became what Lakshmi is today. Bringing the fact home that it has to be a digital platform, because it takes away the whole inhibition of human interaction for women when they want to just try and understand. It has to have a lot of learning and literacy on it. And in a way that women relate. So we churn out humongous research, right, between all companies in financial services. If you just look at the huge amount of research, but there is not one research that women find good, you know, easy to read and understand, because there's so much of jargons. Also, it's all very sort of, you know, targeted towards men, right? So how men think about money. So it's all about beating the Nifty. It is about, you know, a lot of the technical jargons that you would speak about. Very, in that sense, you know, there's a sense of competitiveness even there when, you know, when you're talking about your money. And I think we said, let's structure a lot of content, which is very relatable. Women, typically we understood, even if I save 10 rupees, I know what I'm saving it for in my head. I know this is what I want to do with it, right? So very towards, you know, growing and investing their money towards financial goals. So that was that one big learning, you know, that you have all your content also has to be around that, has to be around financial goals. We made a very, very easy to understand and yet a very relatable learning content. So you could just go onto the app and just learn simple basics about asset classes, investing, you know, financial planning, all of that. And then of course, the investment platform where a woman could go and, because one of the things I realized is all my years in financial services, I've been doing a lot of literacy programs, right? Every Women's Day, my calendar used to be chock-a-block just doing literacy programs for women. But it just stopped there. There was no clear call to action. And I think on this very, I mean, right from the beginning, I knew that this platform had to have a call to action where women could actually go and invest their money. So after you've done that learning, how do you take the next step of investing? Because till you don't do that, it's just left to a learning which you forget over a period of time.
Right.
So that's how Lakshmi, the platform was built. And today, I think that is something that, I mean, while I am on the board of Anand Rathi Shares and Stockbrokers, it is Lakshmi that I completely, that's my baby. That's what I drive full time.
So what is Lakshmi comparable to? Is it like a Paytm Money kind of a product where you can do all sorts of investments? And
yeah, so we are, I mean, the aim essentially. So first of all, you know, it's also made me jump the fence from running a conventional business to really doing a startup, right? So the thought process is very different. We are building blocks. I know what the eventual roadmap is. And the roadmap is to become the money platform for women. So, you know, help her earn money, help her save money, help her understand about spending money a little bit more judiciously, and eventually invest her money, right? We started with the invest block first, where we said, okay, we'll bring in and curate products and package them in a way that women find it easy to take that step of investing. Right. But eventually it is what we are building now is also blocks of everything from earn to invest. So that's the roadmap. Eventually, when she wants to save her money, earn her money and then save her money. So have a savings account where she can understand, okay, you know, this is where she can understand her spending patterns, saving patterns, use that money to invest into different products, draw out her own financial plan. So Lakshmi doesn't aim to be an advisor. It aims to be a life coach, which is teaching you this life skill of saying, this is how you build a financial plan for yourself. And it's targeted to women in the age group of 25 to 35 because that is the most underserved part of the market, because that's the age that nobody's talking to, right? Financial advisors are not very keen on reaching out to women because of the long gestation period, right? And of course, we have spillovers on either side. So we do have 20 years old also now wanting to invest their money, as well as, you know, a 45, 50 year old woman as well. And for us, all of this are the blocks, but the core and the center of all of this sits a community where women come. So we've created a safe space for women only women in this space, where they come and talk about money, challenges, opportunities, you know, their experiences with money, what do they aim to do with that money, a place where they can ask questions, where they can mentor other women. If you've done your journey of, you know, doing your first investment or making your, you know, achieving your financial goals. So the community sits right in the center, and which is where women actually let go of that self-doubt and saying, you know, because a lot of the women don't actually take that first step because either they don't want to ask because there's just too much intimidation, right? What if this sounds like a stupid question? What if, you know, I, you know, laugh at me, right? There's no place for women to really go and ask that question or ask their questions. And third is the whole fear of making mistakes. You know, I know that if I'm going to make a mistake, which is a money mistake, I will be told, I told you, why did you do it, right? You know, it's okay if I'm cooking something and I make a mistake, it's fine. It doesn't matter. But if I'm putting my money somewhere and if I make a small mistake, I will be told off, right? So I think that's the ecosystem where women, I mean, that's the environment that women sort of, you know, live in, and therefore, which is why they get left behind when it comes to, you know, making money decisions. And this is what the community solves. All of these three things, right? So you're watching other women who are in the same space as you, or some women who've broken that and moved ahead and said, yes, I've invested my money. So you're breaking all of these, you know, social orientations, doubts, everything. And then learning from each other, the peer-to-peer learning. So, you know, you will not see a lot of communities with men on it, but you will see a lot of communities, women communities, whether it is fashion, relationship, parenting, lifestyle, anything. That's because I think as women, we like the collaborative approach as opposed to a competitive approach. And I think that's where the community, again, plays a very, very critical role. So it is not comparable to all the platforms that you just mentioned because it has its own unique features which help women, you know, do that journey of breaking those down.
So, and does it have like a social feature? Like, yes. Like you said, that it's,
so if you come onto the app, the first thing is it has a community. And we actually just, so again, you know, Akshay, I was not very sure whether women would talk about money in a community also. Right. So we tried this out as a beta feature as a Facebook closed group. We started this last year and today we have, and it's a closed group, so we can't market it. But just by referrals, we have 10,000 women on this group who are asking, talking money and very active. We have 75% engagement on this.
Wow. Okay.
So to us, it was a proof of, you know, it was sort of proof of concept that yes, there is a need and there is a space that we can create. So we've just migrated it onto the app now, community. So when you come onto the app, the first thing, and this is right now only on the Android, very shortly in the next 2-3 days in the iOS. So when you come onto the app, the first thing you see is a community feature. Where there is a social feature, right? Where you women are asking questions or Lakshmi is asking questions or posing thought-provoking questions. And women are, you know, sort of answering, putting in their thoughts. So that's the first thing. And then you, of course, have the learning tools and the money tabs where you can just go and invest.
So your eventual goal is to be like a neobank, like also to open up savings accounts for women.
Absolutely. But you see, this goes beyond just a neobank because what we're doing is we're creating an ecosystem for women, right? And it's one of its kind. There isn't an ecosystem like this anywhere where a woman can look at everything to do with money, right? From, like I said, earning to investing their money. There are a lot of literacy program platforms, right, where women can go and learn. There are a couple of platforms where you can, you know, which are essentially saying, okay, learn about investment, learn about asset classes. But there isn't, you know, like a end-to-end sort of a solution which can serve women for all their money needs. So it's beyond just a neobank also. It's far more. And the reason I say that is because I think, for example, even simple things like, you know, saving money, Today you speak to a lot of women and they will tell you that what we save is also not something that we control, right? So I think there is it goes back to earning, saying, do you have the ability to earn your own money? If you have, then what sort of that earning should be going into your savings? Once it goes into your savings, if you're married, then this is what happens, right? You have a joint account and yet you have your me account. If you're single, then, you know, based on your goals, this is how your spending pattern should look like, right? And I think very interestingly also, you know, when women look at saving money or investing their money, there are also a lot of other goals. For example, doing something for your parents, right? Which is still a very difficult conversation for women to have if they're married.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's tying in all these dots. So it's not just the science of managing money, but it is also your psychology of money, your needs from that, and then tying in the science together. So it's way beyond just the neobank, right? It's not just products, but it is really, like I keep saying, it's the life skill.
How will you get earning? Will you offer some sort of gig employment opportunities on it, or how will that earning piece come in?
We've already, because now we already have a community which is very deeply engaged. We've been getting a lot of people reaching out to us saying that, you know, we can tie up, can women on your platform become partners for our product. I think we still have
like a Meesho.
Yeah, I mean, not
reseller.
Yeah, sort of reseller sales funnels, or, you know, also tie in, for example, the whole gig piece, right? The freelancing piece. But there's just so much you can do, Akshay. I think, like I said, our roadmap is clear, but I think it's building blocks and seeing, okay, which ones can we will focus on investing right now, because that is that one piece which is completely underserved. And which is a place that women, you know, and I think once you start seeing benefits of investing, then you want to go back to saying, okay, how can I get my own earnings? How can I increase my earnings? I mean, one of the things we tell our women is that you have to have 2-3 sources of earning, right? I think COVID has more than ever showed to us that if you're dependent on just your core job or core business, you are very susceptible. And therefore, you must have, you know, you should build up other channels of revenue. Benefits of investing and growing your money, if that is understood, then we do sort of a backward integration into saying, okay, now get the earning piece in. But right now, totally focused on this journey of saving to investing.
Okay. And the monetization for you would be when people invest, so that there is a certain commission that you get to earn as a platform.
So our choice is either to become an investment advisor or to have, you know, earn on the products, right? And we realize that in India, in our country, I think people don't want to pay for advice. Because I don't think people take, because it's also abundantly available, right? Relationship, your financial advice is available everywhere. Go to Reddit, go to wherever, you'll get financial advice.
Yeah. Unsolicited advice.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's hard. You know, it's just a mindset. People, first of all, don't sort of pay, you know, subscription, advisory is just one of the toughest challenges to solve. Second, I also feel that at the end of the day, if they are actually investing, the aim of Lakshmi is for women to start investing. And I think if I leave it at advisory, then at least Lakshmi is not accomplishing its goal. So therefore, for us, our mission is accomplished when a woman really invests her money. And how can we make her invest with absolutely no cost to her, right? So, for example, mutual funds, we are okay. We are regular funds. We will get a commission on that. But I think it's important for us to tell women that you can go and do a direct fund. But today, if I can give you that 1% alpha and even more, then, you know, this is a place that, and for me, it's pressure, right? I have to make sure that I'm giving women that solution. You know, so we've chosen to be on the more on the distributor model of products, and that's where I think our revenue model will be built out of.
Okay. And what is the investment which has happened so far through Lakshmi?
Can you share some numbers? It's bootstrapped by me and my sister-in-law. So we've put in our and you know, that's how we've started it. So
no, I mean the users, the women who have started investing through Lakshmi, like what is that? I don't know what you call it, like assets under management.
Yeah, the AUM. Well, I think so. The AUM, I think, is still not a big number to talk about, but we have about 500,000 worth AUM within the Lakshmi, because on the Lakshmi platform, the only reason being because we are not Akshay. Our aim is not to push on investments. I think focus is to get women onto the community, get engaged, and learn. And then for them to take that step, next step, right? But the investments we've got so far is a proof of concept that yes, women, when they come in a community, they talk, they learn, they take that next step, right? So what would typically take a woman a year and a half or 2 years or sometimes never, right, to take the step, today it's a couple of months on a community and they take that step on their own. That proof of concept is there. So we have about 2,000 odd women who have already actively investing their money. So I think those numbers now we are focusing on getting the community more richer. Like I said, migrating it onto the app, so it is that one place as opposed to the sort of a break in the journey from Facebook to the app.
Right.
That's where we're focusing on. So yeah.
And what's the plan? Do you want to typical startup mindset or strategy would be like spend money on customer acquisition and that 2,000 number make it like 2 million or 20 million?
So we are looking at, our first milestone is 5 million on the community. And we've sort of seen a, 10 to 15% conversion from community to investing.
Okay.
And that 5 million number comes from essentially, a percentage of women who are working women, who pay taxes, who are digitally savvy, right? Because here you're asking women to invest their money online, who are able to sort of do money transactions and don't feel wary of it. So that's our first milestone.
And what is the time you put for that, to hit 5 million?
So I think it's very, I think the way startups, and this is again my learning process, is that you need to break this into milestones, smaller milestones, that when I get 100,000 is, there are those breaks which from where you grow exponentially. So I think our first milestone, which very shortly I think we shall reach, is about 100,000 women on the community. And then from there we see, how do we take it to the next step? Interestingly for us, it is customer acquisition is the first, just number of users is the first focus, right, on the community. Because it is the community feature.
That's the top of the funnel for you.
But I think the way we look at it is also, why it is also unique is because, like I said, we are community driven. I think what we do is a lot of partnerships with a lot of other women communities who want to bring home to their women the whole power of, growing your money, talking about money, finance, etc. And those partnerships actually are important for us to sort of get women with high intent onto the platform. Our focus on organic user acquisition is very high. Vis-a-vis really doing, there is, of course, the paid acquisition that is much needed as a support. But I think we spend right now a lot of energy, time, effort in really going out and even on our social media handles, sort of doing a lot of financial fitness boot camps, etc. It's a great way for us to even, win trust and then get users onto the platform.
Right. Okay. And you know, what is, are you looking at eventually getting external funding into it and all that, or you want
absolutely looking at getting external funding, because I think, which is why we sort of, like I said, there are milestones that we have, right, from where we know that this is now exponential. So I think we're sort of walking that, we're trying to walk. This is, you can't really sort of say with a lot of conviction that, okay, we will do this. But we're trying to walk that fine balance between, you know, value and dilution. And I think we have, I mean, we have a great example by way of Falguni Nair, you know, in terms of really, although that field is completely different, e-commerce and that too, fashion is just, I think it's very, very different. But I do think that that is something that I would always pay attention to, looking at what is a good time to go out and raise money.
Dilute.
Yeah.
So, you know, running a community comes with its own set of challenges around content moderation, and how do you keep the trolls out, and how do you ensure only women are joining? I mean, a man could pretend to be a woman and join. So how do you deal with those challenges?
Yeah, so you've actually just, you know, just hit the sensitive spot right now, because that's what we are right now completely focused on. It's just the moderation on the community. See, Facebook is very easy to moderate. Yeah, but and because it's a closed group, you're able to moderate it very, very closely. But on the app, we have all the issues that you say, especially when you go out and say it's a women-only community. I think you sort of attract more spam. But we've built in those tools, and I think it's a work in progress. You know.
But how do you ensure only women join? Is there a KYC or something?
No. So right now, so what we have on the app is, you know, typically anybody, even you can download the app and view it. But to interact, you need to sign up. Even if you want to put in a single comment or you want to like something, you have to sign up. I think that is the first friction point where you sign up. And then, of course, we are building in other recognition tools that are in the process. But right now, I think even the sign up works fairly well for us.
I wanted to ask you about the team there. You know, like, what kind of team do you have at Lakshmi now? How big is it?
So we have 15 people in the team right now. This does not include my technology team, because we are building it at ARIT, but now we're bringing that in-house as well. So yeah, we are a 15-member team, largely all women, but I am trying to build diversity here as well. So among 15, we have 3 men, but I mean, given the way Lakshmi is, you know, it will always be by women for women. So
yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Questions.
So okay, let me end with this. So, you know, you are a very public figure. Tell me about some of the questions that you hate to get asked.
Okay, my favorite one is work-life balance. I mean, that is a question that is done to death. And I'm tired of answering that there is no work-life balance. If you're an entrepreneur, there is no balance. And if you're a woman, even more no balance. I think it's just sort of, you know, just being in the present of what you're doing. I think that's one question that I'm just completely tired of asking, tired of being asked. I think other than that, so did your husband play a supportive role? Did your family play a supportive role? I'm like, you know, okay. So yeah, you get questions like that. I think you, but it's okay. I think sometimes it is in a way good, and I tell myself this, that it's important to say that, yes, you have a supportive family. I think it's important to also understand that there are certain things that as a woman you have to create, right? You have to focus more on creating than men do. So create a support system around you is something that's very important that women should focus on. I think there's no taking away from it. just does allow you to perform better at work. It gives you the freedom to, you know, spend more hours. So I think these are also important questions. It's also important for the men out there to know that, you know, that just by just sort of, you know, being equal partners brings so much value in a relationship, in a partnership. So I think sometimes just saying them aloud is also important. But
if you're a woman who's thinking about taking charge of your finances, then do check out the Lakshmi app. That's LXME on Play Store or App Store.
If you like the Founder Thesis podcast, then do check out our other shows on subjects like marketing, technology, career advice, books, and drama. Visit thepodium.in, that is thepodium.in, for a complete list of all our shows.
This episode of Founder Thesis Podcast is brought to you by Long Haul Ventures. Long Haul Ventures is the long haul partner for founders and startups that are building for the long haul. More about them is at www.longhaulventures.com.